What's up, everybody? It's Lee, otherwise known as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat, our weekly podcast. Still going strong, very happy about that. First things first, follow us on Twitter, at That's Kinda Neat. As of the time that we're recording this, we just broke 200 Twitter followers. Very stoked on that. Thank you so much. We also broke 1,000 YouTube subscribers. Thank you so much for tuning into the YouTube videos. You can find them at youtube.com/thatskindaneat. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, database, at I am database, base with two S's. He makes the shit sound buttery, so give him some love. Follow me at It's Intuition. I say stupid shit on Twitter all the time. Hook me up with some love, too. Follow us both on Instagram. We like the Instagram. We like taking the pictures. Ben has mad motherfucking filters. So follow us on Instagram at It's Intuition and at I am database. Today, I'm not going to bullshit too much about myself because I ran kind of long on this podcast with my buddy Mike Jones, otherwise known as Wax to you guys. Wax is a really fucking cool guy. The conversation was great. We ended up running really long on this convo, and then we had another 2.5 hour convo afterwards, just kicking it and talking shit in the studio. He's a really interesting guy. He's got a lot of experience. He's put his time in. He's put his 10,000 hours in. He's truly a master of the craft. Great songwriter, funny guy, does skits, does character acting, has a really interesting background. There's just not enough nice things I can say about this dude, and I was stoked to have him on the show to have another conversation. This is the third podcast that I've done with him. The first one, I don't even count it because it was terrible and I was drunk, and it was like a release party for his mixtape. So yeah, we talk a lot about his family history. We talk a little bit about, you know, his experience in the record industry and how right now his career is back on an upswing. He's got the number one song on the Billboard charts in Austria. It's doing great in Germany and Sweden and all these places. Is big radio hit called Rosanna that has been out in the States for a year now, and it's just been continually gaining traction ever since it came out. So without further ado, just have a good time, sit back and listen to my man Wax Philosophical. That's a really stupid pun, but listen to Wax. This is Kinda Neat. Thanks for tuning in. What have you been up to, man? Like, you just moved to Venice and shit?
Yeah, I moved. My shit is awesome. You should stop by one day. I got, like, studio shit in there and whatnot, but...
Nice.
It's just like, you know, you wake up in the morning, and you just walk out, have a little balcony, and you just... No matter how you feel great, because there's fucking ocean breeze in your face.
Can you see the beach?
I can't, no.
No?
It's like 3/4 of a mile from the beach. Like, yeah. So it's a pretty short walk, even shorter skateboard, and now I have a bicycle. I just bought a bicycle.
Are you trying to tell me that the DUI song bikes were just props, dude?
No, the one bike that I had was actually my bike that I rode, but you know what's funny is that song, I wasn't really that into riding bikes. I maybe like 2 or 3 times rode a bike, but that also happened to coincide with the time I wrote a song about riding the bike.
2 or 3 times in your whole life you've ridden a bike?
Just in that time, in the DUI time period. I'm more of a skateboarder and I was a bus taker.
Venice seems more fitting for you. You seem more like a Venice dude.
Yeah, I moved there from Hollywood. I don't like Hollywood.
I was going to say you absolutely don't seem like a Hollywood dude.
I'm not.
What was it like living in Hollywood?
You know, it's little things. For me, it's about the people. One of my favorite things to do is just to go to like diners and just eat eggs and shit like that.
Same.
And it's just the people that are in there, the pretentiousness and even the girls around there. I don't know. I just like people that are a little bit more laid back and chill. And, I come from a very non-Hollywoodish kind of environment, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I actually enjoyed living in the Valley. I like North Hollywood and even Van Nuys to a certain extent, but...
Because you see the porno chicks and Ralphs and shit.
Right, right, so right.
No, I feel you. The west side of L.A. is a lot more laid back than... other parts, I feel like. Mm-hmm. The thing that I like about living on the west side is, like, I generally will go out in the more, like, quote-unquote hipstery areas, like Echo Park and Silver Lake or downtown or whatever.
Right.
But I don't like to see those people in the morning when I go out for breakfast because I like to, like, fucking wear sweatpants and, you know, whatever. I don't want to see the same people that I saw last night.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I'm generally kind of like a hermit / homebody, you know, so... doesn't really matter too much, but where I'm at now, there's a lot of sunlight, and I just, ever since I've lived in LA, every time I have like a day off where I go do something and just have fun, I always go to Venice.
Yeah.
So why not just have that, I'm a lot closer without having to drive and deal with traffic, and, you know, it kind of sucks if I got to, you know, like the other day I had to drive to Pasadena at 5 on a Friday to do this shoot, and it took 2 hours to get there. That sucks. Forever.
Yeah, you got to plan out accordingly when you're driving all the way across town.
Exactly. I did plan it. I left myself the time, and it took all the time I allotted. So,
how long have you been in California now?
I've been in California 7 years.
From Baltimore?
No, I'm from Dunkirk, Maryland, which is a small town that's actually a suburb of D.C.
Oh, really?
People think that I'm from Baltimore because as soon as you, when you say you're from Maryland, people
it's the only
city people know, so they say that you're from Baltimore. Although I spent a lot of time in Baltimore, like that was kind of my home base for like I played in a band for a long time, so like the Baltimore music scene was kind of like the scene that I was in, and I have a twin brother and he lived in Baltimore for like 6 years, so I definitely spent a lot of time in Baltimore, but I'm not from Baltimore. I'm more from D.C. than I am from Baltimore, but either way, I'm just from some fucking a little suburb.
I mean, D.C. and Baltimore are both pretty hood at this point, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
What was it like growing up in that area? I mean, were you in the burbs or were you in the fucking thick of it? Were you slanging crack?
I grew up in the exact opposite of the hood. I grew up in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in the streets. I mean, there were green signs that had street names on it, so I guess I did technically grow up in the streets. Like, me and my friends, like, we didn't do our dirt in the streets. We did our dirt in the woods. You know what I'm saying? Like, we hung out in the woods and did all the fucked up shit that we did, you know?
Same, yeah, yeah.
So, like, if we went and stole a bunch of shit from the local convenience store, like, luckily we had a bunch of woods to go and we could fucking have all our loot there and smoke all the cigarettes and drink all the whatever we got, you know what I mean?
I literally have the same experience because I was surrounded by woods, obviously. So it was like when some of the homies came up on, like, a batch of pornos, we would go. It's like, okay, you go down this bike path right through the woods, and then when you get to this tree, you take a left and then make 10 paces and there's, like, 4 penthouses buried right there.
Dude, we had, like, a... I don't remember what year it was, but there was this big crazy ice storm.
Yeah.
You might be familiar with that when the trees like become crystallized.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing looked it looks like an ice sculpture with a tree inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened one time. It didn't happen often in Maryland, but this one time it happened and all these fucking trees fell down. So this place back in the woods, all these trees happened to fall down and make this
like a fort?
Like a teepee. And we called it the hut.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about that because like we fucking lined all the walls of this place with porn. And like, keep in mind, anybody listening to this, like at that time, like you couldn't just go on the internet and get porn. Like porn was something that was like pretty hard to get. You know what I mean? Porn was difficult to get. And it wasn't just all video. Like you could actually look at stills and be like, wow, that's crazy. So we had all that. And that's where we would go to get high and chain smoke cigarettes.
Before the internet, a fucking porno tape was like... You just found the buried treasure.
Exactly.
Like, those were like $60 at a fucking porno shop for one, and for two, they were impossible to come by. And now the internet. Who was the first naked girl you searched for on the internet?
The first naked girl I searched for on the internet.
Mine was Jenny McCarthy.
Fuck. You know who I was? Mine was probably Carmen Electra.
Yeah.
Carmen Electra was big for me. I'm into the dark hair more than the blonde hair.
They were both connected by Singled Out, the MTV show.
Wow.
Remember?
That's like 6 degrees of separation.
We're like jerk-off Eskimo brothers kind of. No, that's what I'm saying. Like those two were like playmates that became popular because of Singled Out. That's why they reached a national audience.
Dude, both of them were very hot.
They were. Absolutely.
But yeah, at that time, and if you had a porno tape, it's like because you got it from somebody's older brother or something like that, there's no options. That tape is what you got.
And it got passed
around. There's no changing. You can't be like, well, you know, I'm not as into this. I'll go to that. Well, you know what I always think about as far as porn is the way it's introduced to females. Like right now, I remember when I was in like middle school, girls kind of trying to show each other how to like jerk, like they'd fucking be on the other girl's wrist and be like, you kind of move it up like that. But now they just probably go on the internet and research, and all these young girls probably think that this porn shit that they see is normal. You know, they probably think that the normal way to end sex is to nut on the girl's face.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much what they do in every porno.
I have a theory about that where I think that the girls that are the most freaky right now of this generation is right around girls that were born in 1991. And my theory behind that is they're young enough to have grown up completely surrounded by porn and thinking that's normal, but they're old enough to where they missed all of the PSAs on MTV nowadays about like, oh, don't fucking send videos or pictures to guys because they'll take advantage of you and like don't sext because it can ruin your life. Like those girls missed that message. And also they missed the AIDS scare. Like kids born in 1991, they weren't getting banged on like we were for AIDS, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, there were things that scared me growing up, and it was like, I'll never do crack because I'll instantly be homeless and be on the street, and I'll never have sex without a condom because my penis will fall off or something. You know what I mean?
Dude, I totally agree with you. When I was young, the whole like the concept of having sex without a condom was definitely very much more scary.
So scary.
Maybe that's an age thing. Maybe that's because you're young and shit scares you more. You know?
What's it like growing up with a twin? Are you guys identical?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, let me preface that by saying that people always ask me that.
Oh,
and,
sorry.
And I never
claimed to be original. You dick.
No. What I'm saying is It's normal to ask that, but it's like asking somebody that's black, like, what's it like to grow up to be black? They'll be like, well, I can't, I don't know what it's like to grow up to be white.
You
know,
I
don't know what it's like to grow up without a twin.
It's similarly, people say, oh, what was it like to grow up in Alaska? And I'm like, I don't know. It was normal.
Right.
Yeah. But okay. So let me rephrase that then. Was there any, was there any mischief that you guys could get into because you were twins?
Nah, you know what? We, even though we looked a lot alike, especially as kids, and people got us confused just because the mentality of us being twins would fuck everybody's heads up. Like, we never really looked quite enough alike to, like, you know, he'd go to class for me, or, like, you know, I'd he'd tag team me out the room and I'd start fucking the girl. He was just fucking, that's gross anyway, but, and we weren't like, no, there wasn't really, like, there wasn't really any cool twin shit that we did, man, honestly. The only cool stuff that we did was play music together, and I remember when we used to, like, in, like, middle school, we would, like, do, like, fucking hip-hop dancing shit together, where we'd be on some, like, Kid and Play slash the dudes that dance in the Humpty Hump video style of dancing, and we were pretty fucking good, actually.
That's tight.
You know, the cool shit that we did together was, like, rap together and
did you guys always
like
get
that.
Along?
Yeah.
That's cool. Because, like, my brother is 3 years younger than me, and there were points in our life where we, like, literally hated each other.
Well, we have an older sister.
Okay.
So it was the two of us versus her. Like, we got in crazy fights, us two and her. I guess we had the advantage because we're male and there's two of us, but, like, she hit me in the head with a golf club one time.
Huh.
And, you know, we would, like, I remember we'd, like, push her down the hill when it was snowing and fucking throw snowballs at her. And, but, you know, now it's cool. Now everything's fine. I'm sure it's probably not that bad with
your
brother, too.
How much older was she?
She's 2 years older.
Oh, okay. But that was probably good because when you're in high school, here's the two twin brothers that have an older sister, and you probably had access to older chicks that, like, were her friends that no one else your age did.
Nah, it wasn't like that. My sister didn't have... She was kind of a loner. She was kind of, you know, she got picked on a lot. You know, she was kind of unpopular. I hope she doesn't listen to this, but I mean, she would agree. She had a rough childhood. People would make fun of her a lot.
Why?
I don't know, man. She just wasn't like a real popular kid, and the girlfriends that she did have, like, I wasn't really interested in them. She kind of got involved with some weird people. She ended up actually, my sister graduated high school like 6 months pregnant. You know, she grew up early. You know what I mean?
What was she into being a couple years older than you guys? Did her influences influence you guys at all?
Maybe a little bit, but she hung out with some the father of her kid, my nephew Chris, who's an awesome kid. His father was kind of a wacko, you know, and dropped out of school, probably drank and smoked and all that. He ended up joining the army, and when my sister was like 19, they moved to Germany, and while they were over there, he would like cheat on her. Like, I remember we went to visit them in Germany. We were walking down the street and this hot girl walks by. And he just, like, openly right in front of my sister just starts, like, salivating. He's, like, taps his son. He's, like, see that? See that? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's just, like, weird. Like, I know he like, hit her and stuff like that.
How did you guys react to that?
I mean, you know, we weren't happy about it, but they, you know, they ended up splitting up. And he's just gone now.
Yeah.
And luckily, my sister is in a relationship now with somebody that's the opposite of that. So,
now,
it's cool now.
Is she your biological sister?
She is not.
Okay.
No. She looks nothing like me. She has red hair and freckles. She's what some people may call a ginger.
Okay.
But I don't like, I don't really like to use the term ginger because her son, Chris, is also what is called that. And ever since that South Park episode came out,
hell,
there was a South Park episode where they said like gingers have no souls and something like when you like kick a ginger or something like that.
He walks
down the hallway to school and people fucking kick him, man. And he actually has some like disabilities, you know? And he gets picked on even worse than my sister did, even though he's like the nicest kid you'll ever meet. And when he hears ginger, it's almost like an N-word thing to him, which is interesting because if all the words and all the letters in ginger, if you mix them up, you know, it can actually have the same letters.
An anagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But he sees that word as like a very, very harsh insult, whereas people that don't know, it's just some funny word that South Park used, but they might not know. Like, they say that fucking TV and music don't influence people. I know for a fact it does because of that South Park episode, people walk down the hallway and kick my nephew.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
I'm like smiling because I'm thinking about the episode.
Dude, fucked up shit is funny, man. I don't care. Fucked up shit is funny.
No, that's fucked up, though. That's a real shame that he has to go through that. How old is he right now?
He's 17 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he's been going through that. I mean, because that episode is a few years old, so that shit,
he's been going through it for a minute. Dude, he's been going through it forever. And like
that's
I said, he has learning disabilities and whatnot. So he's already, like, kids are making fun of him and bullying him as it is, you know? So. Mm-hmm. And when you meet him, he's the happiest dude you'll ever meet. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's just like his spirit is not broken at all, but he just like...
I mean, kids are fucking cruel, man. And
I was one of them, man.
And you don't think about it until later in life. You're like, Jesus, I was a fucking asshole. You know what I mean? And that's like one of the things that I hope for when I have kids is that I raise them to just be like, hey, look, be a good person from the start, because like you'll want to be a good person when you're an adult, and you'll look back on the times when you weren't a good person,
right.
Like what a fucking asshole I am. So like, you know, hopefully I can instill in my children that like, hey, skip the part about being an asshole and just be cool your whole life.
Right.
Cause you'll be happier that way. Being a badass is not like that
it's difficult, man. I mean, I got both ends of the stick when I was a kid. I got picked on and I picked on people, but yeah, you know, I guess as a kid, there's no real way not to be an asshole. It's tough. You know what I'm saying? Like you dish some out, you get some and
yeah.
I don't know.
It's all a little bit of like, human instinct and learning, you know, how to be social and shit. And it just comes from, you know, small village times or cave times. Like you got to figure out your role in society and where you fit in.
Yep. And the group picks on the one weakling. You know, that's like some natural human instinct shit.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We mentioned like, that's not your biological sister. Like you and Herbs were like adopted as babies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were born in Washington, D.C. It was like kind of like a one night stand type of situation. My mother was an Irish chick from New York. And then my father was a Cuban guy from, you know, Cuba. And he was going to school in PG County at, I think, PG Community College. I might get some of this information wrong.
That's fine.
And she was going to Georgetown. They lived in the same building, apparently, and they had, you know, kind of like a one-night stand type of deal, and she ended up getting pregnant.
Mm.
And I know it was a difficult decision what to do and everything, and she, having a very Catholic family, I mean, you know, as much as I talk shit about Catholicism, they're probably part of the reason I'm still here, part of the reason I'm on this earth.
Was she Black Irish or was she a Ginger Irish?
She was a Ginger Irish.
No shit.
Yeah, she's... Very recently, I've met these people.
Yeah.
And she has like fair skin, somewhat like reddish brown hair. And then he has dark hair. If you picture what the average Cuban person looks like in your stereotypical brain and what an average Irish woman looks like in your stereotypical brain, they're pretty close to what it is.
No,
you know what
shit.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so they got together and she ended up having us. And after like, you know, a month of trying to decide what she was going to do, she ended up giving us up for adoption. Mm. And then.
So she held on to you guys for a month?
Something like that. Like I said, I could be getting a lot of this information wrong.
Having met them now, do you know, like, did twins run on either side of their family? Because that can be like a genetic thing.
I don't know.
Particularly identicals, you know?
Yeah. Like, I don't know, though.
I used to live with this girl who twins skipped a generation in her family, and she was one of her three sisters is like due to be the one that has twins, and I was always scared shitless. Like, oh my God, if we have twins while I'm living with her, I'm like...
Right.
My life is going to be insane.
That'd be terrible.
Yeah, not terrible, but you know. It's tough.
Interesting thing is that my sister that I was raised with, you know, she actually met her biological mother too. And her biological mother.
So she was adopted as well.
Yeah, she's also adopted.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
My parents couldn't have kids.
So your parents were like saints.
Well, they couldn't have kids.
Oh, okay.
They couldn't have, like physically, they couldn't have kids.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
So they adopted her. Then a couple years later, they adopted us. And my sister... Come to find out, either way, she would have had twin brothers because her biological mom later in life had twin sons. So it's kind of, you know, not, the odds of that are probably not good if you did some kind of math.
What age did you guys find out that you were adopted, or was it just always kind of apparent?
Always known? We didn't like. I remember being like 4 or 5 years old and knowing that I was adopted, and I remember telling other kids that they would make fun of me, and I didn't even really know what it meant.
Yeah,
I just knew
I knew that I was.
I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah, like when you're 3 years old and you're hearing, "Oh, I'm adopted," it's like, okay, that's a word, but it might not make sense to you. Like, was there a moment where you kind of grasped what it meant and maybe started analyzing what it meant in your head?
Definitely not that a moment that I can remember. I mean, I guess it was probably nearby the time when I found out how fucking sex and babies and whatnot work.
Mm.
Probably somewhere near that time, I understood that. I was never in my mom's stomach. I was in some other person's stomach, and then they got me and whatnot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it never really... It's interesting because me being adopted was never really a big deal in my own head, and I put that on the fact that I had somebody that was a blood relative with me all the time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, for my sister, I think that, especially with, like, what I said earlier with, you know, her being kind of like an outcast and whatnot, like, it was always a big deal to her to, like, find her biological family. It was always a big deal. Where I didn't really
Whereas
care.
You had actual blood next to you the whole time.
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Knowing that, like I've known a lot of adopted kids over the years, and they always had a bit of a rebellious streak in that. I feel like there's something that clicks in a lot of adopted kids' heads where they're like, "Oh wait, you're not my real fucking dad. Don't tell me what to do." Did you guys ever have that kind of shit?
No, never.
That's great.
My parents are my parents. You know, I never had anything like that, and I bet you. it be different if I was adopted when I was five or something like that. That would be different.
Yeah.
But to me, it was like, you know, I was 2 months old. I don't know anything different.
Right.
That's mom. That's dad. I would never say some shit like that to my dad. My dad was, I was scared of my dad. You know, he ain't fucking taking
no
mess.
Do?
My mom was a middle school English teacher and my dad was an engineer that worked for like the Navy. Like he worked on like aircraft carriers and shit like that.
But he wasn't in the Navy. He was just,
he was not in the Navy. No, he worked for a,
like a contracting company?
NAVC, which I believe is like an independent naval contractor, kind of like Lockheed Martin or something like that, I believe. He didn't really tell me much about what he did. Like, I'd be like, what'd you do at work today? He'd be like, yeah, I got a lot of stuff done. I'd be like, what? He'd be like, well, essentially, there was a door and it wouldn't open, and I figured out how to open it. I was like, okay.
It sounds like something simple, but it was probably like 86 mechanisms.
My dad's like an engineering genius, dude. Yeah. Like, his brain is an engineering brain. And it was fucked up because when I was a kid, I'm not his biological kid. So my brain is like this music brain and like word brain that maybe like my mom could relate to. She was like all in English and whatnot. But like when I was in middle school, I remember they had like science fair projects and my dad would help. I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
Help me with my science fair projects.
Yeah.
Which essentially means in seventh grade, I had this fucking college level science project that he did.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to present it to these people and then ask
them
questions.
Like, how'd you build this working robot?
Like, yeah. I'd be like, I have no idea what centripetal force is actually. And I'd try to explain it with just thinking of the words he said to me. And I had no fucking idea. So that's one thing about, dude, my fifth grade science project, the title of it was Why Doesn't the Moon Fall into the Sun? I don't even know what the fuck that means. Like, it was in fifth grade. It was like centripetal force and centrifugal force and all this shit.
Yeah.
And it's like looking back at it, like those teachers were like, okay, your dad did your science project. I get it. Because the other kids with dumb parents, they have like five different socks that have different detergents. And like, which works better? Tide, fucking Downy. And then mine's, why does the earth, why does the moon not fall into the sun?
That was like their mom wanting to experiment on like, which detergent should I actually buy?
Right,
and shit.
Right.
Yeah. I remember my fourth grade project was, does air take up space? And it was just a bowl of water and then a cup with like a handkerchief shoved up. And then you'd put the cup in upside down and then pull it out and the handkerchief wouldn't be wet. And so it's like, air does take up space. Lo and behold.
I had crazy, like every year, like I did really well in the science fair because my fucking dad would do it. Once I got to like ninth grade, it was, I don't think they'd even did the science fair anymore.
Did your dad help you guys tinker with musical instruments ever? Like if an amp blew out or something, he could probably fix it now.
You know what? He probably could have, but I don't think that ever happened.
How did he feel about you guys doing music?
My parents were cool about it. Like I said, the interesting thing is like now I know my biological dad and he's a musician himself, but my parents, God bless them, they don't even listen to music. Like they listen to Christmas carols at Christmas time and they in the car, like on the way to church or the grocery store, they listen to show tunes. Like if you played the Les Miserables soundtrack right now, I could probably sing it word for word. Like that and Phantom of the Opera and Miss Saigon and La Cage aux Folles, all these like musicals. That's what my mom likes. She liked musicals.
Did your mom ever teach at the same school as you when you were growing up?
No, she was in a different county. She was in like the rough county. She taught in PG. Like she taught at Largo High School and then she taught at James Madison Middle School. I think both of which are like where like Wale went, I think.
Oh, no shit.
But like they had like metal detectors and shit. My shit was like fucking cake suburbia shit, where we actually lived, you know.
Were you raised in the church?
Yeah, I was raised Catholic.
Catholic. Oh, mm-hmm. Me too.
Did all the sacraments and all that shit.
You know, did you get confirmed?
I did all that shit.
My mother gave me a choice when I was 13 as to whether or not I wanted to get confirmed, and I was already kind of having some issues with God and stuff, and I was like, don't know if I really believe in any of this.
Right.
And like, I like to read a lot, and so I read about like all the crazy shit that the Catholics did in the past, you know, and I'm kind of like, I never looked at it as like, oh, that was Catholics triumphantly fucking winning for their, I was like, man, they're killing a lot of motherfuckers over this shit. So anyways, I was having troubles with that. And I said, I don't know if I want to be confirmed. And she goes, well, you have a choice. You can either go to Sunday school with all of your friends the whole summer, or you can stay home and every Sunday you got to do 10 hours of chores like lawn. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do 10 hours of chores. Like,
wow.
Yeah, and so I didn't do it.
So you confirmed that you didn't want to be confirmed.
Yeah, basically. And I've never really been back to the church since. Do you still practice?
No.
When did you start having issues with it?
You know, until I got, like, you can get confirmed, like you said, at 13, I guess that's like in between eighth and ninth grade.
Yeah. It's basically, the equivalent of like getting your bar mitzvah. You become a man in the eyes of the church.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. That's exactly what the point of confirmation is, that when you're baptized, you don't fucking know anything. You're not making a choice as an infant.
Right.
So once you get to be 13, you're like allowed and you decided not to make your choice. My mom didn't give me the choice, basically. And you know what? That's interesting that you like were reading and stuff at that time. Cause at that time, like my attitude towards church was church is boring and I don't give a fuck about it. I never cared.
That's how I was too. Church is boring as fuck.
I didn't really think too hard about it. I just wished that I could sleep in on Sunday and not have to go. All I cared about was like smoking weed, skateboarding, music. Like that's all I cared about. Like I was, that's that time period. So like once I got into like ninth grade, I was probably still going to church. 10th grade, I kind of was like, I'd wake up and be like, oh, you know, mom, I don't want to go to church. But it, like, once I got to like, you know, maybe out of high school and I ever put any thought into it. And even to this day, I like now more than ever, I'm interested in just like thinking about religion and thinking about God and thinking about how things work and what happens when you die and different religions and how fucking stupid some of the religions are and what they're based on, what their origins are. So, now I'm very not a Catholic.
Yeah. But there's never a moment where it struck you. It was just kind of like, it slowly faded out of your life kind of.
Yeah. I don't know that I ever really believed it, but I don't think that I even cared enough to think about whether I did or didn't.
That was kind of another thing. I think I was super into it as a child. There was actually low key a point in my life where I told people that I was either going to be an archaeologist because I like dinosaurs or I was going to be a priest because I used to go to church a lot.
Right. When my brother was a kid, he said he was going to be a priest.
Yeah. And then at some point I started going like, well, wait, you know, everybody talks about like God talking to them and shit. And I'm like, ain't nobody talking to me. So
maybe it's because when you're a little kid, all your friends are little kids. Mm-hmm. And then once you get older, you realize you're not into little kids anymore, but some people are still into little kids. So,
I was an altar boy and all that shit. Were you an altar boy?
I was never an altar boy. No.
Dude, and
too much time. I did what they call CCD, mm-hmm. which is like basically that means on Monday night, you go to church on Sunday, and then on Monday nights, you go to an hour long like church class, you know?
Kind of like Sunday school.
It's exactly like Sunday school.
But on Monday.
They didn't have the term CCD.
Yeah, we used to do CCD. My mom was actually, I don't know what you would call it, but I always thought it was kind of like a lazy Catholic because we would go on Saturday nights. There was an hour-long service on Saturday nights, so then our whole Sunday would be open. But I would have to go to Sunday school on Sunday, CCD on Sunday mornings, you know?
We did that on Monday nights after school.
And, oh, dude, I would wreak havoc in those classes. I was the only kid asking questions and like...
I just remember we went to... we would just beat on the desks and just because like it was me and my brother and this kid.
You guys are rapping in CCD?
Yeah, rapping. And I don't know if you're familiar with go-go music, but where I'm
I know a little bit about go-go.
Like we went to church in PG County, which is most of the kids in our CCD were black kids. Mm-hmm. And black people in PG County at that time were very into go-go. I mean, you know, everybody was. I just remember like our CCD classes being kind of unruly and nobody really gave a fuck. You know, the only times people gave a fuck were like when it was like Thanksgiving time, like parents would come in and we'd discuss we'd have like dinners for the less fortunate, you know, everybody cook and everything. And like, when parents were there, people settled down. But I just remember the teachers getting like really like, God, I can't.
And they were always volunteers and shit.
Yeah, like, they were always volunteers.
They were always like early 20s young women that were part of the church.
That actually
or something.
Believed in the shit. And what they didn't realize is a bunch of seventh graders in a room.
Yeah.
That's the worst fucking age. The worst fucking age is seventh grade. You're not a kid and you're not an adult. You just fucking are a little asshole. Yeah. Like, the moment a teacher tells you not to bang on the desk, you're going to be like, and you fucking just bang on it more, you know?
Yeah.
And me and my brother, we were just into that shit. Like, me and my brother, like, since kids, we were into just banging on shit and making noise and shit.
So if your folks didn't listen to music, how did you guys start finding out about music? That's why I asked if your sister, like, was into crazy music. Because I feel like you guys have a wide variety of influences, it seems.
Yeah,
you guys are studied on music and enjoy all kinds of music. So there had to be some point in your life where you guys went, holy shit, music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, dude, I'd fucking hand it all to MTV, man.
Okay.
I handed all directly to fucking MTV. When I was a kid, you know,
Yo, MTV raps.
Some of the first people on the block to get cable, because my dad's a big TV watcher, kind of a couch potato. So we got cable early on in the game. Like, I remember watching fucking Madonna videos and fucking hair metal videos and shit. And like, when I saw them dudes playing guitar, I was like, oh shit, I want to do that. So
I've said this before. I feel like I remember the first time that I felt something weird in my pants was the California Girls video by David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
Fuck. And I still watch that video and all those girls are still so attractive except for the bodybuilder one. But proceed.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm aging myself like a motherfucker, but like, I remember feeling like that when I that Open Your Heart by Madonna.
Oh,
Open
yeah.
Your Heart. When she's like in this little thing where the, with the strip, the old school strip club where you put in a quarter and your little window
yeah,
comes
and it pops up. I remember
and she's
that.
Wearing like the black, like whatever the fuck you call that thing.
Yeah.
But I remember feeling like that and I was like, holy
there
shit.
There were some good ones. Dude, Janet Jackson's, she had that one album where like she was in her prime and it was before she started going crazy with the plastic
Rhythm
surgery.
Nation?
No, it was after Rhythm Nation and she every video she was dressed like a 90s skank and like,
yeah, yeah.
like little bits of lace showing here and there. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that was like some real boner worthy shit back
hell
in the
yeah.
day.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Janet Jackson was the shit. That was my first concert.
Oh, really?
My first concert, I went to the Rhythm Nation tour with my parents.
That's tight.
And I remember that.
You
I,
and Herbs?
Yeah, me and Herbs
and
my
sister. Nice.
As a family. And I just remember it was fucking amazing. And the dancing was incredible because
yeah.
I was into that
That's
album.
That's a real show.
Yeah, I was into that album. And I didn't know how amazing the album even was at the time. I just thought the rhythms were cool and the
yeah.
dancing was cool.
It
and
seems like there was almost kind of some go-go influence on that, it seems. No? Like, because it seemed like there was like some tracks that are kind of reminiscent of like, you know, Prince or Morris Day or something.
Yeah, because it was all Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Yeah.
And the Rhythm Nation, that was a Sly and the Family Stone sample, that whole thing, that boom, ba doom, boom, ba doom, boom, and the. I don't know. I was just real into the shit. But the main thing I remember about the show is that my ears rang for like 2 weeks after.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never experienced that before. It was so fucking loud. It was crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, right about probably, you know, me and my brother, when we were in elementary school, like he asked for like Christmas. He had like a toy drum set and I had a toy guitar. And when I was in fifth grade, I got a real guitar. And then in middle school, I started taking lessons from this dude. I had an awesome guitar teacher. His name was Jim. Jim Wood, and I haven't talked to him in years. I don't even know if he's alive, but he was
Jim Wood.
He was a Vietnam vet, and he was a Vietnam vet. Like he had a Vietnamese wife that he met in Vietnam and shit. And he was like this dude. He had these stubby fingers, and he was a blues player.
Mm.
Shit, I play to this day. Everything that I play to this day is based on shit I learned in middle school from this dude. Everything. So I really lucked out with this guitar teacher I had.
You and your brother got into music around the same time watching MTV, and you guys both wanted to pick up instruments at the same time. Did
yeah.
one of you lean more towards something than the other as far as like your brother plays bass for you on stage a lot of
yeah.
the times? Did he want to pick up a bass initially, or was that just kind of out of circumstance?
No, my brother started playing percussion. My brother, they had like a... Like, you know how, like, in, like, fourth and fifth grade, they start doing, like, a band, like, at school
yeah.
with trumpets and violins? My brother played snare drum.
I picked the baritone.
Oh, nice.
Like an idiot.
Nice.
I don't know if it was, like, me doing early penis compensation or something, but I was like, I want the biggest instrument.
That's funny shit.
Yeah, yeah, so.
It must have been so heavy back then.
Oh, dude, carrying it through the fucking snow? I was actually really good, and I learned how to read music great. After the end of fifth grade year, I told my teacher, I was like, I can't do this anymore because I can't carry this fucking thing through
right.
the snow. I don't want to be in the band anymore. And she was like all teary-eyed because I was like one of the only students that actually learned to read music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's Damn. Like, don't do it. She's like, just pick up a trumpet. And I'm like, nah, this shit's too geeky.
Right.
And now I wish I would have fucking stuck
of
with the
course.
Trumpet.
Of course. And it's common, man, because this shit
yeah.
is geeky. I mean, my brother played snare drum in elementary school. And then in as like sixth through ninth grade happens is when you start to think things are geeky and certain things are cool.
Yep.
And instead, like when my brother got to ninth grade, he was in the marching band in high school, but he didn't do it again in 10th grade because it was just, you know, it was some nerdy
yeah.
shit or whatever.
And in hindsight, all of my friends that stuck with band are like doing great things with music now. You
right.
know what I mean? You know Greaves and Budo?
Yeah.
So Budo, I went on tour with them and Budo plays the trumpet. And it's funny, the dude that's in Macklemore's band, OR, that plays the trumpet, you see him all the fucking time on TV. Those two were in junior high and high school band together.
Oh, that's funny.
And now they're like both doing national television programs and shit. It's crazy. Like, what a small coincidence.
To play devil's advocate, they're out of all fucking trumpet players that stunk with it, you're really
not
there's not too many not too many people doing it big in rock and roll bands like
that's
that.
True,
not
that's
too many
true.
People doing it big like that.
That's very true.
So you just happen to know like the two most successful dudes. And who would have thought they'd be from the same fucking high school?
You know what
know?
I mean? Yeah, yeah.
That's like that's like you move to Seattle and take your fucking kid to that particular trumpet school because they obviously
have a high percentage.
Exactly.
But also beyond that, it's like the whole American Pie thing about like one type of band camp, like that shit was pretty true, man. A lot of the nerdiest kids in high school were the ones that were really fucking on the sly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
My brother was in the marching band in ninth grade, and we, like I said, we're in, you know, around the DC area. But every year, the marching band would go to Disney World and play a show.
Mm-hmm.
So on the bus from Maryland to Orlando, which is probably like a 12 to 16 hour ride, you know, all the people in marching band are fingering each other, getting hand jobs. My brother did acid the whole way down. Like, he was tripping on the bus the whole way down.
That was in ninth grade?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
So he was doing that, and people were, he said it was like that. Like, people were freaky, but they weren't. The band people are freaks, but they're not good looking.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody at that age, it's not like only attractive people want to fuck each other. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
So somebody's got to fuck the fives, and it's probably another five.
I've heard comedians do bits about that where it's like, you know, everyone thinks the popular kids are fucking, but it's like the popular ones are, they know they're the value of their pussy. They're trying to save on to that
exactly.
shit. And it's
exactly.
like, it's the ugly nerdy kids that are like really down for whatever and shit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you talk to a lot of your male friends, and especially like in high school, even if they were kind of popular, they might have lost their virginity to a chick that wasn't quite on the popular scale.
You know,
what I'm saying? Because that chick might have made a lot of dudes lose their virginity. Because dudes just want to fucking lose their virginity before other friends do. Like, losing your virginity before your friends do is actually more important than the actual sex. Like, it's like, I got some pussy.
Yeah. No, on the Catty Ron podcast that we did, he said something hilarious. I was like, you know, all the drugs that you were doing by the time you were 14, like, was there sex around too? And he goes, yeah, you know, I lost my virginity pretty young, but it was like all of my homies lost our virginity to the same chick.
Yeah,
like,
dude, my same fucking story for me. I'm not gonna fucking say her name, obviously, and not that she would ever listen to this. Her name started with an M, and at least four of my friends lost their virginity to the same chick.
Mm.
And she would just like, she would just fuck.
What's up, Mary?
No,
I'm just kidding.
it wasn't.
That's funny, dude. So wait, when he's on the road doing the band camp thing, what were you doing?
I mean, he was doing that in ninth grade. So what was I doing in ninth grade? I mean, me and my brother were always real into skateboarding. Skateboarding was big. And in my opinion, even to this day, music and skateboarding go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
When I was really young, I found all my favorite bands through the back of the skateboard magazine.
Yep.
And then once I got a little older, I found all my favorite bands because there'd be like a part on a skateboard video.
Yep.
And I'd look at the end of the video and find out who it was.
Yeah, I think a lot of Americans that aren't involved in skateboarding don't realize like what trendsetters the skateboard community really is.
So fucking
everything from music to style to everything. It's
huge.
Like they're always about 5 or 6 years in advance of everybody.
I would agree 100%.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah,
100%.
Mark, my producer, has the same exact story. Like all of his influences come from skateboarding. That's how he found out about, you know, Souls of Mischief back when it first.
Of course,
that's
me. In like high school and shit, I don't give a fuck. I'll date myself, but like that's where I found out about all the hieroglyphic shit through fucking skateboarding videos. And then, I mean, earlier than that, all kinds of punk rock. You know, Chili Peppers before they were popping.
Right.
You know what I mean?
When did you guys start getting into drugs? It sounds like you guys were smoking weed and doing acid at a very young age.
Yeah, that's another product of living in the suburbs, man. Like, there's nothing else to do. And where I'm from, I don't know what it was about my high school and middle school. But middle school, I started smoking weed and drinking a little beer. I started smoking weed before I started drinking alcohol.
Wow.
I didn't like it, man. When I drank beer, I wanted to throw up.
You're right.
And the first time I got drunk was a nightmare.
What happened?
It was the last day of school in seventh grade, and I skipped school with a couple of my friends. And my parents have my mom drinks a little bit. She has a liquor cabinet. So we got the bottle of vodka, and we had a bottle of orange juice. And we just fucking sat there and pounded the fucking thing, not knowing how fucking powerful alcohol is to you.
And then it takes a second to kick in.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's like, it's not, I don't feel anything.
Yeah.
And then after a while, you're like, I feel a little something. Let's drink some more so we can like really feel it.
Yeah.
Within 20 minutes, I probably blacked out. I pissed in the basement. I puked in the living room. And my sister got home from school, and I was literally laying in, like, there was a pile of puke in my parents' living room, and I was laying in it. Like fucking sleeping like a baby, like, you know, with like a little baby Jesus in his manger, you know? And you know, they just told my sister that I got sick.
Mm.
And my sister, you know, she's fucking eighth or ninth grade. She might be dead, not know, you know? It had to have reeked like vodka. But when my parents got home, they're like, what reeks of puke and vodka?
Why,
you know,
don't, why do adult women not learn that like alcohol takes a little while to kick in? It's like they go to a bar, someone's like, I want a shot. Oh, wait, I'm not drunk yet. Give me three more shots.
Right,
and it's like, hey, chill out for a fucking half an hour and those will catch up to you, you know? And then all of a sudden there's always that one girlfriend in a group that's like shit faced because she doesn't realize to wait for the alcohol to kick in.
Yep.
I don't know.
I think in a lot of cases, and I'm a person that gets pretty shit faced sometimes. Like I know what I'm in for, but I don't mind. You know, some people just like, they like to get like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. We started early though. We started pretty, I mean, I don't know how early people start. I'm sure some people started even earlier, but I smoked weed, not every day, but if I didn't smoke weed every day in high school before I went to school, it was because some shit happened that made it so I couldn't smoke weed. But I was high every fucking day in high school, and then I drank a pretty good amount, and acid was really, really big in my high school.
We did
a lot of acid. I never did ecstasy in high school because I hated rate.
I could never find acid until I got to college.
Oh, acid was everywhere in my high school, and it's so cheap.
I liked acid. Five bucks,
and all day you just lose your mind. Five bucks. People did ecstasy, but I at that time I was such a music snob, and I fucking hated raving, and I hated ravers. I hated techno, so I thought that... Forgive my homophobia, but at the time, especially, I didn't really care. I thought it was just some gay ass shit. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was just some lame gay shit to do ecstasy.
Well, it's funny because we are dating ourselves right now, but we were both around for the original rave. For the original rave culture, and when ecstasy was popular, and now there's a second wave of raving going on, and it's maybe advanced a little bit in some people's eyes, but it's still fucking raving, essentially.
Yeah.
And now, rather than ecstasy, you just have the purified form of MDMA, and so it's like, we've already watched
exactly.
two generations get fucked up on the same shit.
Yeah, it's funny to see the word Molly popularized now, and like, it's this new word, too. Because I remember hearing that shit at Fish shows in 1998.
So long ago, you know what I'm saying?
Like, the word Molly is a hippie word. That came from like Fish and fucking jam band shit. That's where the word Molly originated.
Were you guys into jam bands?
Hell yeah.
Yeah?
Hell yeah. I love the Grateful Dead. I love Fish. I really got into like the jam band scene at that time had a lot of funk music in it, like Soul Live.
You're big on the funk.
Like Grey Boy All Stars. Yeah, funk's like my shit. That's what I started on it when I was a really like... Speaking of skateboarding, when I was in elementary school, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they were funky as shit.
They were a funk band before they got popular.
That's what bridged me to old funk, you know, like Chili Peppers. Because I was like, well, who the fuck is George Clinton? He just produced the Chili Peppers album.
Would you say that's
whatever.
What under the bridge do you? Oh, we'll delete that joke.
No. Can't delete it. You gotta go with it. But that was a good try.
I saw it.
It was
so they were working with George Clinton, is that what he said?
Yeah, well he produced Freaky Styley.
Oh, okay.
Or was it Uplift Mofo Funko Party Plan? He produced one of the early albums, and I just remember seeing him with them in interviews and shit like that. They did If You Want Me to Stay. They did Sly and the Family Stone. They did Jimi Hendrix Fire. They did Fop. They did Ohio Player song Fop. And later they did Love Roller Coaster. They did so many covers. Even Higher Ground by Stevie Wonder. And it's what's funny is all these fucking songs that the Chili Peppers did that were covers, 95% of the people listening to them didn't know they were covers, myself included.
Right.
I had to read the fuck. I was into this shit. I read the liner notes and shit. I was like, well, they didn't write this song, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a difference between people that are really into music and people that just kind of casually listen. It's like, you know, when I was a kid listening to rap music in the golden era and shit, it's like, I would try to read the liner notes to see if the sample notes were in there. Because then I was trying to find, my dad had a big collection of records. I'd be trying to find, can I find the original song that this is from? You know what I mean? Like, that was part of the process for me to like learn more about music. Like, it's glorious when you fucking hear a song and you're like, oh shit, that's a so-and-so sampled that. Like, I love that shit.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think as a kid, it's like, there's something that happens relatively early. I guess it's different for everybody, but there's like a difference between like thinking music's cool and wanting to listen to it and thinking music is cool and seeing the musicians and saying, I want to fucking be them. I want it to be all those people, you know? And
exactly.
whether it be the Chili Peppers or like, when I was really young, I got a fucking tape from my friend's older brother that was NWA and shit like that. And I was like, holy shit, you can say shit like this?
Right.
Like I wanted to be all those dudes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I just, as soon as I saw people playing guitar, I wanted to play guitar. As soon as I heard people rapping, I wanted to rap. You know what I mean?
When did you guys finally start a band together?
Well, our first band was in probably sixth or seventh grade. We had a band called Focus. It was me on guitar, and my brother was on drums, and our boy Richie was on bass. And we actually did a gig. We did a friend's birthday party.
No kidding.
And I remember we had a song called Star World Video Girl, and that was back when there was video stores. Everything I'm saying is fucking dating myself.
Dude,
so fucking. But that was back when there was video stores, and there was this fucking ridiculously hot girl that worked at the video store that was called Star World Video, which of course later
so that
got
was your
taken
first
over
dispensary
by Blockbuster.
Girl?
Yes. Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes. God damn, that's an interesting bridge there.
I'm going to let you get back to the story because I do want to hear it. But I've always thought, like, as a musician, I kind of have, like, in my head, a few different categories of the types of songs that I write. It's like, okay, I've got this type of song, I've got this type of song, this type of song. And it's like, you can't help but go, oh, I've been doing this for X amount of years. Like, it's like the fucking Simpsons. Every once in a while, you're going to brush onto a similar topic that you've already done within the fucking 20 years you've been doing the TV show. So it's like, you know, one of the first songs I ever recorded was like a song that was, it was a reminiscing song about your childhood days. And it's like, I've probably done three of those since then because it's just like a fun topic to talk about again, you know? So anyway, so Star Video Girl was super hot.
Yeah, it's also like, you know, you... Even though you grow and develop, you're still kind of a similar person.
Absolutely.
Like, so for me, for the past for the past 15 years, I've been kind of like, I drink a lot. So if you look back at my discography of like, yeah. I have like music and liquor. I got the song Old Ways. I got the song Doing Damage. Like, these are all the same fucking things about how kind of like it sucks to drink sometimes. Being, yeah. You know,
but it's like,
what are you going to do? If unless you fucking sober up, you're going to write another one.
That's
you know
what
saying?
You're into. Yeah, exactly. Like, people always say, oh, dude, you're a pervert because you're like older and you chase after 21-year-old chicks. And I'm like, dude, I've liked 21-year-old chicks since I was 13. I'm not a pervert. It's just that my tastes haven't changed.
Right. You're like Matt McConaughey in Dazed and Confused.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So anyways, tell me about the Star Video Girl.
Well, that was just a song that I remember we had when I was in that band. We were called Focus, and we were also called the Pork Noodles. And that was, you know, it's a middle school name shit.
Chinese food?
So I play guitar. My boy Richie played bass, and then my brother played drums. And then I guess we did that.
Did you guys do any covers? Or did you just write original songs?
I'm sure we definitely did covers. Mm-hmm. We definitely did covers. What they were, I can't remember. But I remember my band that we started more in like probably 8th or 9th grade was this band. We called it, I don't know why we picked this name, McGregor. But it was like, that's when my brother started playing bass and my boy Fraser started playing drums and I was playing guitar. And I was in that band for years. Like, we extended like to a horn section and we put out albums and we toured. But like, we started in high school just fucking around, getting high in my parents' basement, you know, like...
What kind of music was it at the time?
It was very like Chili Peppers-ish. It was very, we covered a couple songs. I remember we covered Green Day songs, but then we did like Digable Planet songs, and then we did like James Brown songs. We did a couple Grateful Dead songs.
When you say it was very Chili Pepper-ish, I mean, early Kiedis, he was kind of rapping on some stuff.
For sure.
Were you
already
starting to rap at that point?
Yeah,
as well?
I wrote my first rap song in 6th grade.
Yeah.
I was rapping early. Like, I remember... I wrote a rap song about my friend's haircut in 6th grade. Nice. Like, I got a hook and fucking written verses and everything.
First rap song I wrote was an anti-smoking rap.
Really?
Anti-cigarette rap. Yeah, I was in a rap group called Easy Lee and Richie Rich.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. And so 7th grade, we won.
Those could totally be names of like modern white rappers.
You know what I'm saying?
That sounds like G-Eazy and...
there you go.
What's Richie Rich? Isn't there a guy named Richie Rich?
Probably. There I don't know.
That sounds like... That
Rich.
Sound, that's Easy Lee and Richie Rich could have been a group that opened for me on my last tour. Easily.
Yeah, so we there was a contest, like a radio contest, about who can write the best it was like anti-smoking awareness month or some shit.
Wow.
Who can write the best anti-smoking rap, and then we won like 2 fucking Wendy's meals or some shit. Like, it was like when combo, this will really age me, but back in the day in fast food, there wasn't a such thing as combos before a certain year, and then they became very popular in the mid-90s.
I remember that shit.
We won some fucking Wendy's combos, basically.
I remember that shit. I remember when they first made the extra value meal. I remember when they first made the extra value menu.
Yeah.
Two very different things.
That's like pretty current.
Very different
that's
things.
Pretty recent, dude. Yeah. The extra value menu, that's pretty recent.
But it revolutionized a lot of
absolutely.
It doesn't revolutionize shit, but it, you know what I mean? It changed a lot of things. I wouldn't to call
game.
That revolutionary is fucking not right, but it changed the fast food game for sure.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
The Taco Bell one. They kind of murdered it.
Yeah. So you guys are playing like funk music and stuff. And then how many times did you tour with McGregor?
We never made it to the West Coast, but we did like up and down the East Coast. We did like... We probably played in Chicago 4 or 5 times. We did Omaha, Nebraska. That's probably the farther we went.
Was it like
2 or 3
pretty
times.
Serious that you guys had management and shit like that?
We never had management. Our drummer was always our manager. Our,
okay.
our drummer was like the business guy of the group. I mean, we weren't touring in high school. You know, that band like stayed together. Like high school, that band in high school was like, we get off of school and we go and jam.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We literally would just get high and fucking play for an hour and just... Like, you know, we just get good at our instruments. And
well,
and that's
the thing is that, I mean, I'm sure you've read Gladwell and stuff about the 10,000 hours.
Yeah,
and
I haven't read it, but I know
everyone
all
knows
about
it.
About
yeah,
it. Yeah.
Know
about
so
it.
That's the thing is like, you guys started at a young age, really like getting your chops up. You know what I mean? And we keep joking about how we're aging ourselves. But the point is that like, you fucking put in work and it's not an overnight thing. And I feel like maybe a lot of people think that it is an overnight thing, but
dude, I could fucking talk about that forever. I've done the 10,000 hours. I've played the guitar for 1,000,000 hours. I've rapped for 1,000,000. You know, I've been in studios a shitload of times. I know what it's like to record. If you include my band and like projects I've done with my brother and whatnot, I've probably done fucking 10 albums, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And I've just been there. I know what shit's supposed to sound like. And then, then YouTube came along. I've done hundreds of videos, and then people come and ask me like, "What?"
Yeah,
and they think that I'm overnight, and they think
let's delve into that a little bit, because you know, in preparing myself for this, I went and surfed around your YouTube channel, looked at some of your older videos and stuff. Take me through what happens. Like, does McGregor break up and you start making rap videos, or like, did everybody kind of just get normal jobs and was like, just pittered out, and your passion was still there?
It gets to a point in your life where some people are just more successful doing other stuff that's not musical.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? People get a job. It's more important than the band,
right?
Especially if you're, the band is more of a fun thing. And like, you know, hopefully if you're 21 and it blows up and you'll never have to do a whack job and you'll just be like the bass player from 311 yeah. or whatever, you know, but you know, it gets to a certain point where to people that aren't really into it like that. And I'm not saying these people weren't into it, but they weren't into it like I think that I was.
Yeah, they were realists and you had...
Exactly. You know what'll break up a band real fast is successful, intelligent people being in the band. Because they can... Like our trumpet player went to Harvard. Mm. Like, my sax player is like a computer scientist now. And, you know, the drummer owns... Like I said, he was the business mind. Now he owns his own construction company and mm-hmm. shit. Like, so everybody was successful. People had girls. People were, like, moving in with their girls. And, like, we couldn't tour anymore because people couldn't take off work and stuff like that. So the band basically broke up, and at that time I was on some like I gave up. I didn't give up. I was always playing and stuff like that, but I was like, I better find a job. And I tried this job, then I tried that job, then I tried this job, and I had a girlfriend too, so that was part of me trying to be successful. I was trying to be like a dude that had a girlfriend that gets a good job, that maybe later they buy a house, that maybe get a family, blah blah blah. So at that time, you know, I worked at an electric engineering company. I did hotel software tech support. I had several restaurant jobs. I did landscaping. And then the last job I had on the East Coast was I sold mortgages.
Oh, yeah. I sold, that's good money.
Yeah, it can be. Or it can be zero if you don't. It's all commission.
It's commission, yeah.
And I worked at the shadiest company. It's called USA Home Loans. I don't give a fuck. I'll call them out. They don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
All the stuff that made the mortgage crisis happen was because of companies like the one I worked at. You'd call somebody and have a script, and you'd somehow try to scam them into refinancing their house, and then you'd fucking rape them on the back end and try not to let them see that there's the $10,000 fee right there that's added onto the mortgage of your house, which, by the way, 2 years from now, your fucking interest rate's going to go up so high that you'll probably get kicked out of your house. But I'll just tell you on the phone that in 2 years you'll refinance again, and you'll have no problem doing that.
Right.
So, of course, in that 2 years, after that 2 years is when all the fucking the housing bubble burst and everybody was fucked.
Huh.
And, you know, then they had to do the bailout and all that.
Did you feel guilty about that at the time?
I felt guilty about it while I worked there. That's why, I couldn't do it. I couldn't rip off these little old ladies. Like, yeah. Everybody, people that worked at my job were hustlers. They wanted nice cars. They wanted watches. There was 3 fist fights in the office. Like, it was a call center, cubicles, and people would fucking fist fight because somebody stole a customer from them. Like,
wow.
3 times.
Yeah.
That's what kind of quote-unquote office it was. It was fucked up. So I quit that job, and my friend had moved to San Diego, and his girlfriend had a job doing wardrobe on a TV set that was being filmed in San Diego. And she offered my girlfriend at the time, she's like, why don't you just fucking move to San Diego? And I was like, I didn't have anything going on for me. I figured, like, let's try something out. So me and her, we moved to San Diego. She got this job. I was trying to find a good job in San Diego, but instead I worked for my homie, my ex-drummer, his construction company. He was really just starting at the time.
It was down in San Diego.
Yeah, he's still there. DC Concrete, what up?
It's kind of funny about California. I feel like it's a place where whole neighborhoods or groups of friends will migrate.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, funny example, like Mark, the guy that makes my beats, he moved out here with his girlfriend who got into a good like art program or whatever at the time. And literally his fucking entire family moved out, and they all live in Santa Barbara now.
Wow.
Because it's just like they would come out to visit and see how dope it is out here. And they're like, oh, you know what? Fuck it. Let's all relocate. So it's like his whole family that was from Connecticut is now over here.
Right.
And I feel like what you're saying, it's like you, your brother, your friends that you were in your band with, they ended up down in San Diego. Because it's like you go to San Diego and you're like, wow, I get it. Like this shit is dope.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And this is what happened. Let me just tell this story real quick. So we lived in Pacific Beach, which is like kind of like a beachy kind of like area.
It's like the poppin' night area though, right? PB?
Yeah, PB, exactly. We used to fucking every day after work, we get home and we were essentially king of the hill. You know, we'd sit there drinking beer without our fucking shirts on behind this little post. You know what I mean? Basically, we call it standing on the stoop. And every single day, this dude who at the time was probably 45, he wore like it's the same color of your shoes, like a bright orange construction jacket because he was a road worker.
Right.
And he lived right next to us. And every day he'd come home. I say this in one of my songs that every day he'd come home and he'd have an 18 pack of Miller High Life. And when he walks out the fucking thing of his car, fucking cans are fucking flying out that he's already been drinking on the way. He's got one in his hand, throwing it on the shit. Ugh. So every night he drinks an 18 pack of Miller Lite. I mean, of Miller High Life, and he lives there, and he does his road
job. I've heard that song before, and I always think of the dude from Office Space, the next-door neighbor in Office Space with the mullet.
Yeah, but that dude loves what he does.
He had wisdom.
You know, he's a stand-up. Like, this guy fucking hated himself, you know? And I know, because we have occasionally saw him at this bar, and, like, I could tell, you know? And he was fuck-up. He was a real bad alcoholic, and he just... you know, maybe he didn't happen to have a musical talent type of thing, you know, and I could easily be that guy. I would be that guy if I didn't happen to have musical talent.
I always say, like, without a passion, there's no purpose. You know
exactly
what I mean? And like you've always had a purpose because you love fucking music, you know
right
what I mean? Not fucking music, but you like
no,
music.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And even at that time, like, the people that I was around were like I'd go to these open mics in San Diego and like I was different than the other people that were at the open mics. You know, I was different than the other people that were playing their Beatles covers on their acoustic guitar. You know what I'm saying? I was doing different shit. I was doing clever shit. I was doing funny shit.
In the open mics, did you start to gather like a little fan base almost? Like, would the kids from the open mic follow you to other open mics?
Hell no. I didn't have a fan base. No, I had no fan base at all.
McGregor have a fan base?
Yeah, we did.
Did people
sure
follow you guys around or anything like
yeah
that?
Yeah. Then they didn't follow us like we were Fish of the Dead or anything.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
I mean, we were from Maryland. We could do shows in Chicago and maybe have like 30 people there.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Shit
yeah,
like
yeah
that. We sold some records and shit, but.
Nice.
Very small, though.
So you're
very
doing
small
the open mics, and you started to notice that you're maybe a cut above some
yeah
other people.
And I'm just down there, and just I realize, like, if I don't fucking try to do something, I have no direction. I have no other skills. Every job I've ever had, I hated. You know what I'm saying? So I decided to move to L.A.
Had you already posted any YouTube videos at that point?
The first video that I posted was actually not even... It was before I had a YouTube channel. The one that made a difference, and I was living in San Diego at this time... Vibe magazine had a contest called Vibe
yeah
Versus, and it was like, you know, you do a video of yourself rapping and you post it up on their website, and then people would go up and look at all the videos and they'd, you know, rate it and comment on
vote
it
and all that
and
stuff.
Like, I didn't win, but I just did really well and people were impressed, and like I even had an email from like an industry guy or whatever. I was like, what the fuck, like you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my brother put up our own YouTube channel, and before I moved to LA we probably did 4 videos.
What was
maybe
the first one?
The first one was me.
Is it still on? Is it still on your
YouTube? Sure. This was actually, I think, before we had Wax and Herbal Tea YouTube. I think it's just my brother's personal YouTube. It was called Wax Spittin'.
Okay.
And just me rapping in his kitchen, kind of fucked up acapella. But it's got some bars.
Yeah, I've always kind of wondered, I don't know how to word this properly, but it always seems like Herbal Tea has taken a noble kind of like, he's played the background in a very noble way because he's very talented in his own right. But it seems like even he kind of knew that like you were the one.
Yeah.
Because like
yeah
he's holding the camera in a lot of the early videos, right?
Yeah.
And he seems supportive. Like the one that really sticks out to me is the fucking 6-minute long one where you had the poof in the front of your hair.
Yeah,
you
the
had
faux
the faux hawk and
yeah
shit. What is it, Wax Spits Fire or something?
Wax Spits Fury yet again.
Yeah. Like, dude, you guys were even smart about naming your videos because that's like very like, that's like
it's kind of
YouTube-y. Yeah,
it's
YouTube-y shit. And so my whole thing is like, you could see him supporting you because he's there. Do you think that he knew like maybe you were the golden child?
Dude, I mean, there could be something with that. It's really hard to pick it up.
Does that question sound disrespectful?
Not at all.
Okay, cool.
Not at all.
If
he was in here right now, he would probably be better chiming in on it than me. But you're right. Like at that time, if you look at our early videos, it's really just stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah, like the channel is Wax and Herbal Tea, but most of the videos are you rapping. You know what I mean? And also that video, Wax with Fury, is crazy. Like
thanks,
even
man
now, fucking that was in 06, I think was the date.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even now, those are bars. You know what I mean? Like that shit's
thanks
crazy,
man.
So you're really onto something early, and that kind of led to you being the quote unquote like original YouTube rapper, kind of. No,
nah, I was sometimes I wish that I would have really have kept my YouTube output level up the way that I did it at first, because I was in there mad early. Like when me and my brother first started doing YouTube videos, being a quote YouTube rapper was like some nerdy.
It was a
nerdy
sin
shit
almost.
Yeah,
yeah. Well,
exactly.
And
you're shooting yourself in the foot.
I think you and I talked about this on a previous podcast, because my whole shit is like, I saw some of your early videos because they were getting posted at rapmusic.com, and I went, it's fucking gay that this is on YouTube, but this kid is tight as shit. That was my attitude. It was like, it's really lame that it's on YouTube, but like this kid really has fucking bars. You know what I mean? But stepping out and saying that somebody that was on YouTube had bars was like, you had to really defend yourself and be like, nah, you're missing it. Like this is dope.
Right. Because the old attitude was that like, I mean, say here in L.A., like, you got to go to events like The Spliff or Project Blow.
Yeah.
And people in L.A. got to know you before anybody else can get to know you. You can't just be in L.A. and be, like, some guy.
Back then, it was in the mid-2000s, it was like, you have to put some skin in the game and pay your dues and be playing shows and have to go through the same shitty fucking pay-to-play people. And you kind
of
were smart enough to bypass all that.
Right. But I had been there. You know,
absolutely. In a different scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so I think that maybe having had that kind of almost separate life with McGregor, you know what I mean? It's like you were smart enough to know, well, with the rap shit, I'm going to do it a little different.
Yeah, and I had an advantage of like, like you said, I kind of skipped a lot of the steps in the hip hop world by just doing this shit on YouTube and just getting these random fans. But at the same time, when it came down to do shows, like I was seasoned, you know, I had shit I could do, and I did.
And that
weird
was a crazy
shit.
Thing. This is another thing we've already talked about on a previous podcast, but the first time I met you was at the Spliff. Yeah. And I already had my little fan base or whatever, like rappers knew me in LA and shit. But I came up to you on some like, oh, hey man, what's up? I'm fucking Intuition and I think you're dope. I've seen your YouTube videos. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, whatever. Thanks. You know, I didn't know you lived in LA. I had just seen the YouTube videos and I was like, oh shit, this kid's playing the Spliff. That's tight. And I don't think anybody in the audience like realized that you had this fan base.
Nobody
already.
Did.
You know what I'm saying?
I remember that. No, and the reason I was doing the Spliff is because it's just like me doing the open mics in San Diego. The first week I lived in LA, I did an open mic every night. Mm. But I do different kind of open mics. I do open mics where you can play your guitar and you know, you might be playing after like some hippie chick that plays a guitar too. Mm-hmm. Once I moved to LA, what I realized is actually most of the open mics in LA are stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
But it worked good for me because I had some funny songs and shit. So I was trying to, I had a friend, my boy Kareem, was one of the first people I met that kind of was in the local hip-hop scene. So I was like, I wanted to do shit like that. I wanted to do shows like that. I wanted to kind of try, like I'm in LA now, I'm trying to do some shit, like let me get into the scene and shit like that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get into like, I didn't want to just sit at my house and make YouTube videos.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I remember doing that show. I remember I kept getting bumped and bumped and bumped. And I played.
Well, and the Spliff was a little, it was counterintuitive in that most shows, the headliner goes on last. And at the Spliff, since it was mainly like Westchester and Westside high school kids, the biggest acts always went on first because like the kids had to get home. It was on a Thursday or I can't remember what night of the week it was, but it was like they had to get home because they had shit to do in the morning.
Also, if they'd have five acts booked, but then a couple other people would just show up and be like, yo, can I get up? And then they get up there for a fucking half an hour.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Like,
that's one of those things.
You know, you can do the math if, and you know, time doesn't fucking extend.
I just want you to know I was there for you in
that's
the crowd
what's up,
cheering,
man. That's
cheering
what's up.
You on. I said, yo, Verbs, I don't know if you realize it, but this kid's like low key internet famous and he's hella tight. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
I remember at that specific one, that was at the Rehab Records or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that's really
sad. And I remember I saw.
Verbs was actually our last episodes, or like two. Well, for you, it'll be two episodes ago now. So like, we were just talking about the Spliff.
Dude, Verbs blew my mind. His freestyle ability.
He's amazing.
Like his rhythm and his flow blew my mind. I did think he was a bit of a mic hog. Like I was like, when are you gonna let somebody else rap?
Because he can rap forever.
But then I also saw Dumb.
Yeah.
I didn't know who the fuck that was. I saw him and he actually performed at that one. He did his song called he had a song about blue balls, the blue ball blues that I thought was fucking amazing. He had that. You know how he does with like the Koreatown, never be around, never see around. You know what I'm saying? Like all that shit. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, damn, this dude's fucking dope. So I saw a lot of people with that. I might be getting a couple of them confused because I went to a couple of them at the same venue. Like some I just watched and some I performed. Now it was really weird to go there because like it'd be one of those things where like I'd go by myself and I don't know one person.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that was always weird.
And it was also a very young black audience.
Yeah, yeah.
I would go there and oftentimes be one of the only like four or five white dudes there. You know what I mean?
Right,
it was like that kind of shit. You know,
I'm a pretty outgoing dude. I'm pretty talkative. You know, I when I'm on the stage, I say a lot of shit. I'm good with fans, but when I get to like a party and I'm by myself, I'm fucking the most socially awkward, nervous motherfucker. I'm not good at talking to people. Like, I've been to like Hollywood parties too, not just like these hip hop shows. Like, I've been to like Hollywood things by myself or music industry things by myself, and I just choke up and I just want to fucking leave, you know?
So you moved to LA and you start doing the Spliff and stuff like that. And at this point, was your YouTube following, it was doing pretty good at that point. Like,
it was getting better.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, I remember when I first moved to LA, I remember telling somebody I had 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And that was fucking incredible.
That,
you know what
I'm
saying?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I have now. And a lot of my friends look up to me like, dude, how did you do that? And I'm like, everybody that's really popping now is like 400, 500,000, a million, 2 million.
But now subscribers don't mean shit. That's a whole other story. But now it's not the same.
How did you figure out, you were an early adopter to YouTube, how did you figure out that it could be something that was going to turn into something so lucrative?
Never did. I never had any idea that it would. It was all fun. It was all a hobby. And I thought that if I kept on doing this shit, maybe I could get a record deal or something like that. But I never... At the beginning, we didn't have this ads thing.
How did you get pulled into the YouTube community, though? By the time I met you, you were part of like the community. Like, who reached out to you and said, oh, hey, man, there's a bunch of us that do this. Come kick it.
I mean, you know, at that time, there was definitely kind of a community. Like, Tim De La Ghetto definitely, like, shouted me out and, like, gave me some followers and fans and shit. And there was, like, people that would do, like, the YouTube ciphers, like me, Traffic, who's Tim De La Ghetto, this dude who at the time was 14 years old, D Pride, and then Prince E, you know.
Yeah, Prince EA.
Yeah, but it's actually Prince E.
It says
Prince
EA,
but it's pronounced Prince E.
Okay.
There wasn't that many people in it, really. Honestly, I would still say that me and my brother were kind of on some, like, lone shit. You know, we didn't really do too many, like, collaborative things. Like, I don't, you know. Later, I started to know, like, Ray William Johnson and, like, I met like Shane Dawson, Shay Carl. I've hung out with.
Yeah, the crazy thing about that community is it's a bunch of people that are hella famous that don't realize how fucking famous they are.
Right.
So like Ray William Johnson is the most fucking popular dude on YouTube, and like I saw him at a show one time and he goes, "Oh, hey, I know you, you're Intuition." And I said, "What the fuck? Like, you're like, that's the motherfucking George Clooney of YouTube and shit."
But everybody in the industry does, they discount all that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
They still say, "Oh, he does YouTube videos."
That's what I'm saying. They don't get it. Right. And like, he's making money.
It's changing now, boy.
He's probably making more money than a lot of people that are fucking in big budget movies.
Dude, I mean, absolute fact that Ray William Johnson's YouTube check is worth way more than what he would get from Comedy Central to do a show.
Right.
You know, if you're Daniel Tosh and you've proven yourself and it's your fourth or fifth season, and that's probably a different story, you know, then you're getting that Chappelle money, but like, you know, top level Comedy Central money. But like, say for example, you got a show on MTV, like when Andy Milonakis had a show or something, like I know what those paychecks are like. Ray William Johnson was making that money in a month. You know what I mean? Like, but it's still discounted. It's still...
Well, it's the same way that I used to look at it and I would go, oh, this guy's fucking dope, but he's on YouTube.
Exactly.
Like, that's the same mentality now where
Now I'm on MTV and that means fucking nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I have videos on MTV and like every once in a while somebody will look at the videos and be like, oh, Wax is on MTV now. He's like famous or something. But really, all people really say to me is, why don't you make more YouTube videos? You
know? Right, right.
I'm on MTV now. It's kind of a goddamn shame because 10 years ago to be on MTV, I'd be like,
oh,
I'd be fucking
sick. Giving a left testicle.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
When was the point after you moved to LA and you're doing the videos, like when some industry people started really taking notice of you? By the time I met you, you already had like industry management and stuff like that.
I mean, that was until I'd probably been in LA for 3 years. You know, when I first moved here, what really made me move here, the only reason I could move here is because I went to the Los Angeles recording school and I got a loan. I got a student loan to go to that school. So I did that for 9 months. And then I started working at yummy.com, which is a grocery delivery service in Hollywood. I worked there for about a year and a half. I lived in the Valley with my homies, Tony and Andrea. And then...
Sup, Tony and Andrea.
TNA. What up? But 3 years, probably more like 2.5 years after I lived here, I got approached by somebody that at that time worked at Interscope. They actually emailed EOM. They emailed him to find my shit. I was like, dude, how'd you find him and not me? And then I met with my first manager. He worked at Interscope at the time. And when I had that fucking meeting with him, dude, like it was like I told all my friends and that we were all like fucking giving each other hugs. Like, man, do good at this meeting. Like I was in San Diego with my brother and like it was like around our birthday. So we're celebrating and everybody's like, you know, this meeting was a big fucking deal. I'd never been right. in like a fucking wreck. Like in my mind still, even if after being in LA for 2 years, the record at company buildings have soldiers walking around the door, you know, with fucking guns shooting anybody that fucking tries to put their demo up there.
Lined in gold.
Yeah, exactly.
You walk in and someone just gives you a bowl of oatmeal.
So I get there to do the meeting and it's like just some lady at a desk. I'm like, you can just fucking walk in here. You can just walk into Interscope and just take the elevator up and meet with whoever the fuck works here. So, you know, the first manager I had, his position at Interscope was much more impressive to me than his actual, like, personality and intelligence and everything.
Everybody got really cool titles in the music industry.
Yeah.
Their title seems so important.
His was assistant A&R. He was the assistant to this A&R guy, Tony Ferguson.
Really, in the grand scheme, assistant A&R is kind of like...
The next step up from intern.
Yeah, it's pretty low.
Runner, intern, assistant.
Yeah.
So he was the assistant to this guy, Tony Ferguson, who his big claim to fame was he was the guy who signed No Doubt. So he was from Interscope from day one, Jimmy Iovine's boy, he was good. So all this shit, was like taking me around the building and me seeing the gold records and shit, all this shit was super impressive.
But he was probably just like a 25-year-old kid or something.
He's just a dude trying to do his thing, you know what I'm saying? Great guy.
One thing I will give, like everybody that's in the music industry that I've met, like the young dudes that are the assistant to somebody, like they're hustlers, dude.
Yeah,
and they're fucking working multiple angles
for
and all of them are either trying to get into A&Ring or managing or something. Like they're all hustlers and they're smart dudes. And they realize that they love music, and they probably tried to do music, but it's like they were smarter than us.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
Like they realize like the money's behind the scenes.
Dude, it's so crazy, man. It's such a fucking weird industry, and it's exactly like what you said. And then what happens is these dudes are hustlers, and then some of them are such good hustlers that they get pretty high up without really being good at being an
A&R
guy.
Himself, yeah.
They're not really good at being an A&R guy. And even more so, some of these people, their dad is this guy. Their uncle is this guy. Their friend is this guy. It's
all
fucking
nepotism.
You know, I'll jerk you off, you jerk me off shit, you know?
If I'd have known that, I'll be over there with rubber gloves on right now. What's up, music industry?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. But I ended up, you know, a lot of people in the industry liked me and, you know, I ended up getting another manager too. I had two managers at one time and then, you know, I was doing shows. I was building a fan base. I was putting out mixtapes and shit. I got a record deal.
Are you still with B. Washington?
I sure am.
Interesting story about him. Him and Christian Clancy like came up together, right?
He came up under Christian Clancy. Christian Clancy worked at Interscope he was like the head product manager or marketing director, some fucking title, and he worked on. He was real big on the Eminem project, all the marketing of the Eminem early Eminem projects.
Yeah, like he handled pretty much the Marshall Mathers project, I think. Mm-hmm, and then also was a big part of G Unit, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, a lot of shit with 50
so
Cent.
If you guys don't know that are listening, Christian Clancy's the one who went on to like really change the music industry pretty much with Odd Future. And so Brian Washington, your manager, worked with him or worked for him?
You know what? I think he was kind of like his assistant. I think at some point he was kind of like directly. I know he worked directly under Clancy for many years, and they became good friends, and they're still really good friends to this day. You know, I've hung out with him a few times. Motherfucker's cool shit. He looks exactly like Brett Favre. And I know he learned a lot from Clancy. And Clancy is one of those people that was like, you know, and when they had the weekly meetings with Jimmy Iovine and all the Interscope staff, Clancy had smart shit to say. Clancy talked, and he told Brian, like, listen, you can't be just some fucking guy sitting there. You got to say some shit. It's better to say some shit that might not be the greatest shit.
But at least you have ideas.
But at least you have ideas. And Brian Washington's big project over there, that once he got a little higher up, his big project was Soulja Boy.
Oh, okay.
And it was funny because he got up to a position where he could run some shit, like a product manager of a certain product. So they fucking are like, here's your first project. And they fucking played Crank That Soulja Boy.
Oh,
and fucking
shit.
Brian Washington's initial response was, motherfucker, I got to fucking do this.
But he was successful with it, obviously.
Yeah, but then he started to listen to it. He started to understand Soulja Boy. He started to understand who Soulja Boy was. And they fucking just murdered it. They killed that project. And you know, Brian Washington, it was his idea. I don't know if you remember, but when they came out with Crank That, you know, the Superman That Ho had a dance to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Brian's idea to do like an instructional video for the dance. And that video blew the fuck up and actually made the song like 10 times bigger than it was. So Brian was successful with Soulja Boy. He worked with Rich Boy on the Throw Them D shit.
I love that song.
When Brian left, because of that, you know, partially because of that, when Brian left Interscope, he had a gig as the marketing guy for Polo the Don.
Oh, yeah.
Then he just went independent, and you know, his big project now is me. You know,
I don't know Brian Washington that well, but I've always, like, just looking from the outside, it seems like you guys have a really great relationship.
Yeah, for sure.
I've always wanted to find that, a great manager that, like, you know, you have a great relationship with. Like, what's the working relationship like?
Man, it's interesting because if he was here, I'd say all the same shit too, by the way. We definitely go through our disagreements, and we've been through some shit. Like, we were in the industry, and like, one week we'd be like, yo, well, we just got to make some fucking hits. And then the next week we'd be like, you know what? We were wrong.
Fuck last making week, hits, let's do
let's,
us.
Let's just do us. That's what's gotten us here. And, you know, sometimes, and like, we've met, we you learn as you go, man. Yeah. Like, you know.
Is he like another brother? Like, another, like, you guys argue and go through things just like you would a fucking blood brother,
easily,
basically.
Easily, yeah. And you know, there's good times and bad times. Yeah. And, like, there's times we learn about what we're good at. Like, there was a time, for example, when he was very involved in the creative process of a music video. And it kind of, like, now, because it didn't really work out in that situation, now he kind of steps back. And lets, like, me and Casey or whoever it is do our thing. Like, when we did the Rosanna video, he had no involvement. You know what I mean? And it did great. You know what I mean? And, like, sometimes when he's on the set, we can feel these nerves. We can feel his eyes looking at us. And I tell him that. I'm like, I can feel your eyes looking at me, judging me. Like, is Wax looking cool right now? Yeah. Is Wax looking stupid right now? What's Wax wearing? What, blah, blah, blah. So sometimes he just stays out the way now. And also, and vice versa, like, he's very, very good at handling business shit. He's very, very good at negotiating. He's very, very good at talking to people. There's certain places where, like you know, he'll come to me today and be like, "Yeah, I had this meeting yesterday." He didn't even tell me about the meeting. That's fine. You know, he doesn't have to tell me about shit because I trust him to handle it.
He's a big dashing motherfucker. Like, he could be a soap opera star.
That motherfucker is a commanding presence. Yeah. Dude. He is a commanding presence. It's so funny. Like, he'll walk across Santa Monica Boulevard in Hollywood at 5 p.m. and he won't even fucking look. He won't even fucking look. He'll jaywalk. Everybody stops. You know what I'm saying? If I were to do that shit, people just run me the fuck over.
Whoop, whoop.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
But dude, when he walks into a room, like, he has a commanding presence, and that's important in a manager. And no offense if my other manager ever hears this, but my other manager didn't have that.
Right.
And my other manager didn't know how to talk to people and said very weird, awkward shit to people. And like, if he were to tell me, like, yo, I had this meeting yesterday, I'd be like, oh fuck, who was it?
Yeah.
You know, whereas Brian, like, I, you know, I trust him to do everything.
Yeah.
I trust, he don't have to include my name on his emails that he sends, you know, and he doesn't need to, because I don't have time for that. I should be doing my job,
right.
And he should be doing his job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if I'm not doing my job, he'll get on me, rightfully so, and vice versa, you know?
So your journey with Def Jam has been talked about to death. Like, I've listened to your own podcast and videos about it, so I'm like pretty familiar with that story. And I think a lot of the people that are tuning in are probably familiar.
Right.
I would like to ask you more, like, on the personal side of that journey, because I know talking to you, you know, various times when we would see each other around at a bar or whatever it was, it's like, oh, how are you feeling about everything? And you're like, you know, now that I'm signed, I feel like kind of lost. Did you feel like you were getting to be yourself when all that went down? Or like, did you feel like you were having to play a role? Like, how do you feel about that overall experience in hindsight?
I feel like I never knew that I was a quote unquote artist until they kind of took my ability to create art away from me, you mm-hmm. know? Through all these years when I was in San Diego, when the girl broke up with me and I was heartbroken and all the shit, like the shit that got me by wasn't me. I mean, I was broke, obviously, so it wasn't money, but the shit that got me by wasn't that I had a big ass fucking bank account. The shit that got me by was that I could go play my guitar
and do whatever you want
with it. Make my shit, yeah. And so, yeah, they gave me a bunch of money and now they're putting me in these studios. And at first it's cool. Like the first it's cool. And, you know, I'm making what I want to make, but they, you know, they're not into it. Not that they're not into it, but they're not quite, it's not quite what they want, you know? So then in certain studio environments and just even via email and phone, like they, you know, they want me to make fucking Love the Way You Lie. You know what I'm saying? They want, and it's like, oh, is that all you want me to do, motherfucker, is make a fucking enormous song like that? And I don't even have a name for myself. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm getting in these sessions and I start to make these, a lot of songs that I, in my fucking gut, I don't fucking believe in the goddamn songs. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe some of them would be successful and maybe some of them would get me to the next level and blah, blah, blah. But like, you realize that, you know, like, at least for myself, it's different for everybody. Like, maybe if you're a hustler and you want to get money, or if you're a kid and you want to be a star, you know, I'm fucking way beyond that age. You know what I'm saying? When I get signed and shit, and like, I can't fucking put this shit out. I don't believe in this shit. And in certain cases, like, I questioned everything I was doing so much that I didn't even know how to write songs anymore. And I'm still suffering because of that experience. It still affects me to this day. And it really fucked me up, man. Like,
is there anything that you put out that you regret? Are you somebody that says like, oh, I don't have any regrets?
Fuck no. I'm not.
Absolutely.
I'm
the same
no.
way. When people say
fuck
that, I'm
no.
like, fuck you. Yes, you do.
Fuck
you
no.
Asshole.
I'm not one of those people. I'm not you one know? Of those people at all. I have tons of fucking regrets. I have regrets every day. And
that doesn't have to be something that you go into fucking detail about, but is there anything that you put out that maybe you're like, ah, I don't know, maybe that was the wrong move?
You know what? The stuff that I really, really didn't like, I luckily enough didn't end up putting out.
Good.
The stuff that like really I was like, I mean, most of the stuff, the real bad stuff I didn't even finish. Like the stuff that like there was this particular fucking joint, man, and I fucking cringed when I heard it, and I was writing a verse to it. I was in a studio in Atlanta and there was this dude, he's like written some hits before, and like he saw a couple of my videos and he's like, okay, I get what this guy does.
Right.
And it was just this basic corny song about smoking and drinking, like everybody's drinking, everybody's smoking. And it was just like this fucking corny shit. Like for me to be it's like singing this shit, like I'd rather fucking kill myself. And you can ask my brother. I called my brother crying from a hotel room, like a little fucking baby in Atlanta. I called him and I was like, I don't want to fucking do this. I got to get out of this shit. And you know, it's not like after that I called Def Jam and be like, let me out of my contract. They ended up dropping me, you mm-hmm. know? And that's partially because I couldn't fucking work anymore. I didn't know how to do it. Like I'd go in these, after a certain amount of time, I'd go in these sessions with fucking big name producers and shit. And every once in a while I'd do something all right. But like most of the time I'd just, you know, like somebody might be like, well, just go in the booth and do what you feel. And it's like, I don't fucking feel anything.
And, well, and also that's probably not the way that you work.
It never was.
That's not the way that I work. I'm not a guy who goes and jumps in a booth and sees what happens. Like I fucking hole myself up in my little world yep. and I write for a week or however long it takes me to finish the song. And I don't want anybody to watch me do it. And when I come out and I'm ready to do it, I do it in a take because I already have it fucking memorized perfect. You know what I mean? I'm not a feeling person. I art is very tactical.
I'm exactly in between where you are and that feeling shit, because my verses and shit, I want to take as long as I want for them to be done. But like, there's certain things with like certain hooks and shit. Like it's almost like the faster you come up with it, the better. But
yeah, absolutely.
For me, when I'm in a situation,
well, I often write the hooks first because they guide the song. It's like the beat starts the feeling makes the hook decides where the verses.
That's pretty much exactly how I do shit.
Yeah.
Especially if like you have a start with the beat. Like if it starts with the beat and then you just write into somebody's beat. That's pretty much exactly how I work. And another way that I work is that when I'm in a fucking room in Atlanta and there's fucking eight people in the room and there's the beats playing real loud and they fucking give me a pen and a pad
and all of a sudden,
I feel fucking all these people that I've never met in my fucking life staring at me.
That's what I was going to say.
Call me a pussy, I don't have that kind of confidence,
and
man.
I was going to say, now you don't have just Brian Washington's eyes watching you going, does he look cool? You have eight fucking strangers watching you going, what's he going to do?
Is he going to come up with something amazing?
I should be in his seat. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
That's the kind of shit.
Exactly.
Because it's all,
Because everybody
don't want to be fucking songwriters. They want to be stars. You know what I mean?
They're all thinking all this, and some of of those people aren't even songwriters. There's somebody's homie. I don't fucking know who they are, but you know, I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, who the fuck is this guy and why do you even have a deal? And if they're not thinking that, I'm thinking that they're thinking that. Yeah. So that's fucking me up even thinking that they're thinking that, and even if they're not thinking that.
The other thing that you said about that story that stuck out to me was when he watched a couple of your videos and said, oh, I get it. I hate that shit, because here's the thing is that everybody wants to stick their nose into your business, even with the podcast shit. Oh, you should have so-and-so on. And it's like, hey, man, look, I appreciate your help with my music or with the podcast or whatever. I appreciate that you want to reach out and help. But it's like, there's a script. People don't understand there's a script in your head. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between Mike and Wax probably very minorly in your head where it's like, oh, you know, real life Mike would do this, but Wax wouldn't do this or whatever.
Right.
Because there's the same thing with Lee and Intuition. And the script is very subtle, but it's like, I see it. When somebody else assumes that they could write that script for me, it really fucking throws me off.
The funny thing about all this, and I always preface like this, all these people are fucking nice people. None of these people are fucking assholes. None of these people mean to be like this. It's just the way the music industry is. And this other guy, you know, he watched one or two of my videos, and it's particularly tough with me because I do so much shit. I'm not really a boxy person, you know? I'm not like, you can't describe the shit I do real easily.
Absolutely, and that's probably almost part of, I don't want to call it a problem, but like that's
it is
part
a problem.
It's an issue because everybody else, like, you're very multi-talented, multifaceted, so it's like when you talk about an elevator pitch, people always say, oh, what's his elevator pitch? Well, I guess at the bare bones minimum, it's like, oh, well, he's a white dude from DC that raps. But it's like, nah, because you're a character actor, you're a comedian, you're a fucking singer-songwriter, you're a rapper, you're a video producer, whatever. I understand what it is to be like, you're good at too many things.
Yeah, and I think, nothing against this guy, but I always use an example, Yellow Wolf. Yellow Wolf, you can describe in a tweet.
He had the perfect elevator pitch.
Exactly.
He had the and
my shit is. I would hate to be my A&R guy. I'm not a very marketable product. If I had some success, the whole being able to do a bunch of shit thing would be great.
Yeah.
You know, and like if all of a sudden Eminem came out and he's fucking playing guitar, great.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But like to come in as this weird thing doesn't make sense. And I understand why it was so difficult. But these people would look at one or two videos, and most of the time they would be like, oh, he's a Mac Miller. He raps and he plays flip cup and shit like that, you know. And this one guy, I think the funniest, I always quote this one guy that was in the studio. He was a songwriter that was in the studio with me and Polo. Nice guy. But I sang one part of the hook, and I was like, all right, let me do the harmony. He was like, Wax doesn't sing harmonies. Wax doesn't sing harmonies.
Yeah.
Like he's my fucking, like he's the A&R guy and my manager now.
Right.
He's seen one video. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
And that kind of shit happened, man. And I'm not, you know, it was a learning experience, and I'm fucking so blessed to have it. And now I'm in a cool position.
Well, and I think things seem to be like back on an upswing, because randomly you put out the Rosanna video and it was a slow burner, but all of a sudden it's a fucking smash hit in Europe. It's like number one. It's doing Macklemore numbers in Europe and shit, right?
Yeah, it was Rosanna was a video I put out the day after I signed the paper to get dropped, and it had a viral immediacy. Like it got a million views in like 2 days, and it was like, it had like its US viral period because it's like a funny video. It's got a hot ass chick and all that. But then there was a guy in Germany, a guy in the UK, and a guy in Australia. Nobody in the United States gave a shit about the song except like regular people, not industry people, but all these other people like Warner Germany, Ministry of Sound in Australia. And Warner Germany really means like Warner Austria. It goes to Finland, it goes to Holland. Like, and now it's extended.
Austria, Germany, Sweden, like the RZA would say.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's funny because the RZA, the way you said it, I thought you were saying like an Austrian Arnold Schwarzenegger. But they, you know, this guy, especially this guy that at Warner Germany thought that Rosanna was a hit in Germany. So we signed some papers, and it was just for the song. Like, he's not, I told him, I'm like, I'm never ever doing this fucking bullshit again where you put me in a studio and tell me to make a hit. I'm never doing that. If you like my song, let's do it. If you like my album, let's do it. But I'm not fucking doing any shit you say as far as like, let's make another hit with fucking this producer and that songwriter and blah, blah, blah. I'm not doing that again. But I signed a deal with them. I got a little advance for them, and they started blowing up the song. And like, as we sit here today, it's the number one song in Austria, not just on iTunes, just like in the pop charts. It's above Pink. It's above that new Daft Punk song. It's
crazy.
Above Justin Timberlake. It's like number eight in Germany. It's going up in Sweden, Finland, Luxembourg, Holland, fucking. And now I'm about to go out there and do all these shows.
Awesome.
I'm doing like the German MTV spring break shit on the island of Mallorca.
Whoa.
And then I'm doing another.
I hope you meet the German Pauly Shore.
Is there one?
I don't know, but if there is, I hope you do. With the, what's happening, the tide shift kind of, like the whole Macklemore thing when he blew up and like Warner is pushing Macklemore's record. And so now it's like this thing where you don't need to be in a studio having people to tell you what to do, but you can still utilize the last grasp that the record industry has, which is over radio. The mainstream radio oh. market. Are you scared that now it's going to be like, oh yeah, Wax is the next Macklemore?
Nah, I don't give a shit.
No?
I don't give a fuck if they say Wax is that guy. Who's that guy who did Rosanna? I'm older.
Yeah.
I'm doing my thing. You know what's important to me is fucking seeing my nephews and shit. I could give a fuck what people say. I got my own life.
That's dope.
Especially if I blow up over there and not over here and I can still walk on Venice Beach and maybe only one or two people recognize me, fuck yeah. I go to Ralph's, get my little chicken and fucking spinach, you know, do my
thing. Yeah. That's a great perspective. I've always respected that about you. Is like ever since I've known you, you're far more comfortable in your own skin than most musicians that I know.
It works to my downfall though in some cases, because if I was maybe Macklemore or like I don't fucking know, if I was just somebody who still really cared about that fucking dream, you know, like that dream of like, oh my God, I want to be famous, I want to be rich, I want to fuck supermodels and shit like that. You know, I don't really care about that dream anymore, and it definitely affects my productivity.
Yeah.
Like when I have time off, I fucking take time off. Like I don't give a fuck. Like I bet you somebody like Macklemore, not saying he wants to fuck supermodels, but he cares about the glory. He wants to be on top. Like some people look at life as a competition. Brian Washington being like the prime example of that. That's what our main difference is. He's competitive. He wants to be on top. He wants to be the fuck. He's always asked me, why don't you want to be the best? He says to me, he says, you know all these rappers out here? And he names like every fucking dumb white rapper that's out now. You know, he's like, don't you think you're better than them? I'm like, yeah, I actually do. He's like, why don't you prove it? I was like, you know what? I already did, man. I will prove it. I'll put out some YouTube videos. But like, if I don't have more Twitter followers than Mac Miller or something like that, if Chris Webby gets more people at his show than me, you know what? I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
that's fine. I don't care. I don't even feel like I'm in those categories.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay, let's talk about our direct fan base, our direct like circle of people that we're involved with.
Okay,
like your metrics aren't as high as Dumb as far as Twitter goes, or like Watsky as far as Twitter goes. I don't think I haven't checked that recently.
No, I'm not.
But it's like I feel like you still have as strong of a fan base that will come out to your shows, and I think that you've built over touring and being that road warrior and like really putting on like you. Not to like hop all on the dick, but like you put on a great show.
Thanks,
if you guys
man.
Haven't seen Wax, like he's one of the best performers as far as rap music goes. Like he does the live band thing without being corny at all with a live band. You know what I'm
Thanks,
saying?
Thanks, man. I appreciate
it. Yeah,
that.
Absolutely. So I feel like you've set yourself up to where you can still be comfortable. If you didn't put out another song for fucking 15 years, so long as you keep touring and having fun with that, like you could still have a life in music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the rest is just the butter on top, you know?
Yeah. So. I mean, I'm lucky enough, like, I did this tour and I might not be doing 1200 seaters, but if I'm selling out 300 seaters, you know, like, I mean, shit, if I was selling out 100, you know what I'm saying? I can still make a living doing the shit. And people,
yeah.
I do things like I have a podcast, you know, that I do. Wax's podcast is supposed to come out every Wednesday. It usually comes out like every Thursday.
Oh,
you can check it
out on Wednesday too.
Oh, really? Well, mine really, I was supposed to come out on Wednesday, but I slack. So it always comes out on Thursday.
Okay.
So, well, that's cool. Every fucking week, we can just shout each other out.
Yeah, bang.
But wax.com, waxdotcom.com. I've been having guests on recently just like because people stop by and we're like, let's do a podcast.
Yeah.
But like we just talk shit. We don't really do any cool in-depth like interviews and shit. We just talk shit. But usually it's just me ranting about like something that happened to me at the coffee
shop.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You know? When I was first starting to think of this one again, like I didn't know whether I wanted to go the like solo route or the guest route of what I was already doing previously. And I kind of came to the decision that if I was to just sit and talk for an hour, it would be just a fucking negative, hateful podcast.
Right,
so
right.
I was like, no, I got to have people to talk to.
No, but you should keep on doing what you're doing. You could be like the Marc Maron of hip hop.
I mean, really... shout out to Marc Maron because I completely stole his format. I do it the same exact way. And really, that is kind of like when I talk to Ben about like, yo, I want to do a new podcast, like listen to Marc Maron. This is how I'm going to do it.
Are you familiar with Bill Burr's podcast?
I don't listen to Bill Burr's podcast, but I've heard it. Yeah.
I pretty much did a podcast because I heard his. I was like, I think
I
could do that.
I could see you being like really a kindred spirit with Bill Burr.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to touch back real quick. You mentioned, you mentioned like you love to like hang out with your nephews. I can tell that family is important to you.
Yeah.
Oftentimes on your Instagram, it's like, you know, you're down there hanging out with Herbs and his lady, and you got another new nephew, right?
Yeah, Manny.
Yeah, so we touched earlier about meeting your biological parents. Like, when did that desire finally kick in for you guys?
Actually, what happened was when my brother first was about to have his first son, Max, something happened in him. He was like, you know what? I want to find my biological mother. And part of that was because of like, you know, he wanted to find out medical stuff, medical records. We had no idea what kind of shit is in our family, liver disease, heart disease, whatever. Unfortunately, it turns out on our dad's side, it's like all that shit. Like
really?
Everybody dies young, which sucks because sometimes I feel like I'm getting something. I don't know. But My brother had the desire to find his biological mother, and he found her in 10 seconds on Facebook.
Get the fuck out. How?
He knew her name, and he knew what high school she went to. He searched both of those things, and bam, there she was.
Yeah. How'd you find your dad?
Without even asking, once my brother found my biological mom, she went ahead upon herself and found him. They hadn't seen each other.
I was going to ask, like, having had like kids together, were they still at all connected in each other's life?
Not at all. Not
you know
at
what
all.
I mean?
They were done from day
from
one.
Day
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
What was it like? Did you see yourself and your mom when you guys met her? Like,
oh, for sure.
Were you like, oh, I look like her?
For sure. She has a, I don't know if it's older or younger, but she has a brother that she, you know, she brought pictures when we first, we met her in San Diego at my brother's house the first time, and she brought some pictures, and like, she has these old pictures of her brother that look exactly like my brother.
She flew out here, or does she live in California?
No, she lives in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she flew out here. I think it might have been random. I think she might have had some other kind of business to attend to out here or something like that. But she's a computer programmer. She's passionate, loving. She's a bit neurotic, and I can see all that stuff in myself and my brother. And then we met our biological dad, who's machismo, musician. And I see
what kind of music?
Plays piano, guitar, plays Beatles songs, plays a lot of Spanish stuff. You know, he's Cuban.
Yeah.
You know, he has an accent and everything.
Oh, that's tight.
He runs a Cuban restaurant in Silver Spring, Maryland, which I would shout it out if I remembered the name. I never even eaten there, but supposedly it's really good.
Nice.
It's interesting because now we know these people, and they all live in the D.C. area. So now when we go home for Christmas, there's all these other people we got to see. And then I just did a show in Baltimore, and my biological dad comes, and there's other people in his family. And sometimes it's a little awkward because people don't know what to call themselves. And am I your cousin? Am I your brother? What is this? Like, you know what I'm saying? So, you know.
That's like a YouTube skit.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I'm a drinker, but usually family occasions, I stay at least relatively sober.
Right.
And I remember we had, I think it was New Year's Day, actually, and we were at my biological dad's house in Silver Spring. And it was like the first time I met his whole big Cuban extended family, and just so much talking, and they're so interested in me and my brother, because not only are we these long lost adopted twin brothers,
you guys
we're also twins,
and, cool
and you can
lives.
Also you can also fucking see everything about us on the fucking internet.
Yeah.
So everybody there wants to talk about my job. I don't ask you about your fucking job because your fucking computer programming job isn't on
interested.
YouTube.
Exactly,
you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. It's like oh shit, wait, they're twins and they're verified on Twitter.
Right.
Holy shit.
So that shit, like, in that situation, like, the whole, like, being a musician and putting yourself out there and that's your career, it gets weird because I don't really necessarily want to talk about that over the Christmas fucking turkey or whatever.
And you're also that kind of dude where, like, you can oftentimes deflect questions about yourself because it's more polite when somebody says, oh, you know, how are you, rather than going, well, oh, this happened. You go, oh, same old shit, how are you?
Right. Yeah, I'm good at it. Yeah, I'm good at it. I'd be like, yeah, everything's going great. You know, I'm really doing what I like. What's up with you?
Yeah, that's the much more polite way to do it anyway. So,
But there's a difference between what you say and how you act and how you feel in your brain.
Yeah.
And in these situations, my gut is just to fucking drink. You know what I'm saying? So it's the first like family event that I got actually shit faced. Like I drink, you know, I drink with my mom and have a couple like, conversations about politics with the relatives that I've known since I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like my family that I grew up with, like, the entire thing, the extended family is like 9 people, you know, like I have 1 cousin, 2 aunts and an uncle, you know what I'm saying? And like the whole thing, like it's tiny. So to meet all these people and everybody's interested and they're like, everybody wants to know people, you know, then the young kids are like, have you met Beyonce? You know, shit like that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what is this? This is so surreal. You know,
and then on the Cuban side, it's like Tio's and fucking.
Yeah. Yeah. And dude, everybody thinks I can speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Cause my brother can speak Spanish.
Yeah. Does he speak Spanish? I thought he spoke Portuguese.
He speaks both.
Oh, really?
You know, he's fluent in Spanish and Portuguese.
When I met you guys, honestly, I thought you were both Mexican.
But everybody
that's
I met
California
now,
shit,
everybody
though.
I met in LA thinks, especially Mexican people, they all think I'm Armenian.
Oh yeah, I feel that. I get that a lot too.
I can see that. Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here, tell the people, plug yourself. Where do you get found?
Yeah, you can find me Big Wax, BIGWAX. That's my Twitter and my Instagram. Fuck with me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at facebook.com/wax.com, WAXDOTCOM, because my website is wax.com.com. That's WAXDOTCOM.com. And of course, you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/waxandherbalt, WAXAND H-E-R-B-A-L-T, or just go to the search bar and type in wax rapper and you'll find tons of shit.
God damn, how many times have you done that?
I never did it that good.
That was fucking,
that was a good one.
That I felt was like, one take.
I felt like I should be like working as the guy who announces the prizes on The Price is Right.
I was really good with that. That was amazing. That was really good. Plug your podcast one more time. What do they look for on iTunes to subscribe to you?
It's just called Wax's Podcast. If you just type that in the search bar, you'll find it. The picture is me drinking a cup of coffee.
Amen.
And I just talk shit about random shit. It's called Wax's Podcast. The slogan is talking mad shit about uninteresting facts. But it is interesting.
I'm letting him know right now that I'm going to be on his podcast soon.
Yeah, I'm going to come over and hang out and do one of those. Dude, you probably live 10 minutes from my house
We live very close to each other, I think. Not that I've Google mapped you, but I have. No, I'm kidding.
Real quick, I do a segment. I guess I could just do this after the show.
No, but I do
a segment on my podcast called Call Someone and Fuck With Them. And that's like kind of like my interview segment. So maybe you could either come through and be a studio guest, or I could call you if you'd rather do that, whatever you want to do.
You could call me while I'm on the way to the studio.
Well, the thing is, the Call Someone and Fuck With Them segment, the whole point is that I'm not supposed to tell you beforehand.
Oh, okay.
And it fails all the time because then people don't answer. It's supposed to be a prank call.
Yeah, you just ruined it.
That's what you think, but you won't remember.
Thank you guys for tuning in. This was Wax. That was a very informative podcast.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Be sure to check out my man, Ben Shim, who does all the audio engineering for this podcast, at @IMDatabase on Twitter. Follow me at @itsintuition. Follow us at That's Kinda Neat. Peep the YouTube video. We're at youtube.com/thatskindaneat. Remember that you can find everything that we do at our website, kindaneat.net. That just rolls off the tongue, kindaneat.net. And yeah, man, thank you guys for tuning in. This was kinda neat.
Is that how you end this? This was kinda neat?
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah.